Time for our midweek panel here on Classic Business, and to continue one of the more critical conversations currently underway in the public square in South Africa, that of financial inclusion. And financial inclusion is all about ensuring that all South Africans have access to financial services that encourage them to manage their money better, to save for the future and for rainy days, paying credit, and also to insure against unforeseen events. And it's especially important for low-income households who live in or very close to poverty, and there are far too many of those in South Africa. Tonight, it's all about the Stokvel's role in all of this, and it's largely based on an excellent and authoritative bit of research published by the National Stokvel Association of South Africa and ASASA, and it's looked at the last three decades of Stokvels in South Africa. So it's a pleasure to welcome my next guest, who I first met over 10 years ago now, when I was working with FABCOS, the Foundation for African Business and Consumer Services, to establish the Second Business News, late David Gleeson. Andrew Lukele, founder and chairman of NASASA. Good to have you on the show, Andrew.
Thanks so much, Mike. It's good to meet you again.
And tonight's other panelists in studio are innovating in the space to provide solutions that really cater for a new generation of Stokvel member. Ayanda Masuku, the co-founder and director of SV Capital. Ayanda, great to see you.
Thank you so much, Mike.
And SV Capital really focuses on investment opportunities in disruptive ways. I'll let you describe exactly what you do in a few short moments. And then to round us off tonight, we've got Sepo Maloi, Chief Executive Officer of Stokveler. Sepo, good to see you.
Good to see you, Michael, and good evening to your listeners.
Now, Andrew, kick us off, because the majority of South Africans have grown up with Stokvels. Well, I think the minority of South Africans still don't fully understand exactly how they work. Firstly, what do you characterize as a Stokvel at NASASA?
Yeah, look, Stokvel is a kind of an informal savings group that is typically kind of prevalent in the black communities. Basically, you'd find a small grouping of 10, 20 people decide to save money on a weekly, monthly, or fortnightly basis, on a rotational basis. So this concept that has been in existence for well over 100 years.
And how large is the Stokvel universe? Because depending on which numbers you read, it could be anywhere between 8 and 12 million people in the Stokvel universe, and the figures I've seen as much as 50 billion rand of, shall we call it, savings under management, or assets under management, to use the formal terminology.
No, you're right. I think research indicates that there are over 11 million individuals in this country who participate in a type of a Stokvel, one way or the other, and there's about between 40 to 50 billion that changes hands in this grouping, which are about 100,000 groups in total.
300,000 groups in total, and these groups are basically pooling their money into a Stokvel, which, if you look at it, then almost becomes a deposit-taking institution. How are Stokvels regulated? I believe you've actually got an exemption from the Banks Act and its regulatory and supervisory framework.
Yeah, it was always smooth sailing. You remember that Stokvels existed in an environment which was very hostile to some kind of self-help initiatives. So Stokvels, for many years before the formation of the National Stokvel Station in 1988, were operating really as an underground economy. No one was talking about Stokvels in that community, because that would invite the authorities, which perceived Stokvels at the time as legal. So it's only after the formation of the association in 1988 that they started to enjoy some kind of dignity with the negotiations that took place, as you said, with the authorities, in this instance, the Reserve Bank, and generally the National Treasury.
Now, when we talk of Stokvels, obviously that is a very large pool of capital that could be used to start to generate wealth for the individual members of those stock wells, depending on what the use is for. If it's a burial society or if it's a monthly grocery consumable need, you might have a different strategy. But we've seen banks through the years try and provide services to stock wells. I think Nedbank through PERM, which is the South African Permanent Building Society, I think we can all recall, was the first financial institution in the country to really recognize the potential to do business in this informal savings sector. And we're going back almost three decades now. Why then did PERM end up with such a large black client base? How did it understand the Stockvel market that allowed it to make inroads?
Look, it's a very interesting thing, as you highlighted. Remember, PERM conducted research well back in 1984. It's only in 1988 that the first account or an account for stock sales was established with the PERM Building Society. So that 4 years gap tells you a story. Despite the fact that the research showed them that there's people saving money on people of groups using personal accounts, they did not launch a product by themselves. 1988 was a very politically volatile era. I think the formation of the association at that time presented an opportunity for interface with the PERM Building Society, NASASA serving as a community-based organization. That carried weight for the negotiations to take place and later to end up with the law of the first account for themselves. But I think the success of the PERM Building Society is the fact that they were advised to ensure that they don't interfere with the culture of stock sales, because a stock sale thrives on peer pressure and the trust element. So as soon as you take those elements, you take people back to the visual interface that people have the bank. So the group phenomenon that is a basic tenet in a stock sale is very important in whatever product that we launch.
That's very interesting, Ayanda, to bring you in here to talk about the culture that exists inside these informal savings clubs. Andrew mentioned the peer pressure, the fact that members apply that cultural peer pressure on each other to ensure that they keep up with payments and don't miss payments and whip everyone into line. And these are the perhaps softer issues, but no less important issues to understand if one is to harness the power of these informal savings groups to help deepen financial inclusion.
Yes, so I completely agree with Andrew that in a stock file formation, you tend to find a group that's driven on social capital. So what you find with that is a lot of stock files are driven on trust. And anything that happens within that structure, there is a trust element that everyone is working towards a common goal. And in creating, I think from an investment product creating side of it, you'd need to understand the fact that the market you're working with is already hesitant. So they're not trusting of financial institutions, they're not trusting of any new products coming to market because they've been previously defrauded, if I could say. And that trust element has to play a part in understanding the psyche behind it. Because you'll find these groups that in saving collectively, there's always a common goal. And you'll find that, like Andrew said, with stock files that actually have rotational element to it, that they actually pay out on a monthly basis, a lot of those people are dependent on that money coming in. So with people missing payments or not keeping to the commitment of that stock file, it messes up with that commitment payment. It messes up with the whole structure of a stock file. And it sort of adds on to the distrust that's already in the stock file structure.
Right. But you've touched on an important issue there as well, Tsepo, and that is one of security. We have heard stories of stock files being defrauded by one member who's been given signing powers over an account. And that just further reinforces this lack of trust of having a formal bank account. And I think people would therefore rather stick the money under the mattress, unfortunately. Do you know the numbers of how many stock files are banked versus unbanked?
Thank you for the question, Mike. I think last research I heard was like about 60% of the stock files are banked. The rest, yes, is still kept under the mattress, as you say. But I think what my two panelists here are touching on is one thing that we'll be trying to solve as Stockfeller, is how to make that trust more transparent. You know, you would look at the products of these days that the banks offer. Yes, there are signatory powers, but it's still not as 100% transparent as you want it to be, because not every single member within the stock fund will get that notification and know and trust that their executives are doing the right thing. And that's where we come in as Stockfella, to enable that trust. And I think what Andrew touched on is very important, is not change the behavior of the Stockfella. It still allow them to do what they do, which is monitor each other. However, give them the right tools to do it. I think a lot of products out there have not been giving the Stockfella the right tools, or they have not been designing tools for Stockfella to enable themselves and empower themselves to be better and grow from that 40 billion or 50 billion to 60 to 70 to 100. We can't stay between 40 and 50 billion for 10 years. It doesn't make sense. You know, otherwise inflation is eating into that 40 billion. So it needs to grow with time. And I think the biggest challenge is that it has not been going through with time.
And how does Stockfella seek to do that? How have you, because it's an app-based solution that you've developed that also speaks to a bit of a generational shift that we're seeing move the attitudes or inside Stockfella. How does Stockfella work?
I think the foundation of every Stockfella is the admin. Once you get the admin right, meaning that once everyone is transparent to their admin, I think the most successful stock files we've seen on our app is where everyone has a hand into their admin, basically. Once you get that right, then you can start talking to stock files about better economic opportunities. You know, for example, what SV Capital does, you know, we link directly with SV Capital. We say, look, Now you understand your admin. Now you understand that everything is transparent between everyone else. What can you do with your money? And that's where Stockfella comes in to say, who can we link with you in order to give you better value than the current value that you're getting at the present moment?
And Ayanda, when we look at the opportunity here, we once again have to go back to, what is the purpose of this particular Stockfella? Is it a burial society? Is it for monthly groceries? Because you need to match the liquidity requirements of the members of that Stockfella. We're talking now about SV Capital. You've entered the market with something that's very innovative and a way for Stockfella investors to think a little bit more long-term and strategically, if their liquidity requirements aren't immediate, to invest in something tangible. You've got an agri fund. Let's start off with that. How does that work?
So the agri fund is focused on providing Stockfella's a real asset-backed investment. So we realized a need for Stockfella specifically, that a lot of them are not happy or comfortable with investing in the virtual world. So the struggle with that is there's no tangible asset behind it. They can never really tell or see the transparency behind any investment in the virtual world. So by us providing that physical investment, that gives them the comfort that there's a real asset behind it, and also paired with attractive returns. So historically in the market, what you see across all five banks, the savings accounts provided to Stockfella at average make a 5% return. So for me, a 50 billion rand market per annum making 5% return does not make sense. So products, we as XV Capital have created a product to bring to market that will start generating a different way of creating wealth for Stockfella by providing real and by providing attractive returns, but also giving them the opportunity, like Tapo said, to start sort of moving away from the consumer mindset, but more the wealth creating mindset.
And you've done that by offering the ability to invest fractionally in cattle or even in farms.
Yes. So through our agri fund, we actually work with small scale farmers, where we provide investors, that being Stockfella, the ability to invest in a farm. But with actually investing in a farm, we've turned a farmer's underlying assets, that being the cattle or lamb, into investment products. By applying the fractional investing thesis, this means a Stockfella can come together and own a piece of a cattle or piece of lamb. And what that means for us is we've lowered costs. So historically, the problem with investment products is that they've been high entry points. And a lot of Stockfella struggle with that, because high entry point, they really can't afford to start investing. And by applying the fractional investing thesis, we allow that cost to be dropped. So now minimum investments are sitting at 2,000 Rand or 500 Rand for lamb. And also with applying fractional investing, it allows us to diversify or lower risk. Because, I mean, if 10 of us are holding one asset, the risk is lowered.
You've diversified that risk. What sort of returns are you offering exceed the very paltry CPI plus 1 or 2 that some stockpile savings accounts offerings and I hate to be disparaging to the big banks here, but they really do have to start delivering something more compelling.
I completely agree. So our fund currently offers on a quarterly basis, we give a 7.79% return, and that is inflation beating, JSE beating, and current bank products beating. And I think the core drive in that we want to maintain such returns, because we realize the problem in the market, that the money that's currently sitting in the financial institutions is not being utilized appropriately and not making the correct returns off it.
That's quarterly, so you extrapolate that out and you're well in excess of even what private equity is doing in beating the listed market. Andrew, to bring you back in here and to talk about the way the formal kind of the banks have tried to approach designing products for stockpiles, one does get the sense, and I've said it on the show repeatedly over the last few weeks, that we've got product designers inside large financial institutions who just haven't taken the time to spend a night in their customer's bed, to walk a day in their shoes, to solve for some of their particular challenges. How should banks be looking at the stockpile market and designing products?
Yeah, I think they should move away from their Eurocentric approach. You know, they have a tendency to say, we have every product in our shelf, choose one of them. In many cases, those products don't suit the culture of members. So they see all these other things like peer pressure, the trust, the meetings, long hours of debating stockpile issues as an irritation. They're only interested in someone bringing the money. So some of the products that they offer don't stand the test in meetings of these stockpile members. So it's very important that they should take the culture very seriously and plug in without undermining what these people are all about.
And there's also an issue here, Ayanda, to bounce it back to you, of understanding the needs of perhaps urban stockpiles on the one hand and rural stockpiles on the other. Things like FICA. Banks have to, according to law and regulation, FICA when they're on board clients. Yet in the rural areas, it's very difficult to provide all of the necessary FICA documentation. Do you think there's a need for the law to actually start evolving to take into account some of those unique challenges that the stockpiles might face in rural areas?
So I think that definitely needs to be taken into consideration, because the difference, so with your rural stockpiles, they tend to not have the necessary documents like you just highlighted, whereas with your urban stockpiles, they do have that proof of residence, they do have that constitution in place. So by doing that, already banks are leaving out a large chunk of the market that already is saving, that already have those structures in place, but cannot open up that bank account due to things that are beyond their control. So with the aid or changing of certain regulatory stances around how we manage the onboarding and FICA requirements, that could aid the financial inclusion that has been a hot topic for the past couple of years.
Tsepo, you like calling financial inclusion financial expansion, which I think is a fantastic way of looking at or reframing the challenge of financial inclusion. Just to take me through the thinking but behind just tweaking one word there.
Yeah, look, I think I undertouched on it right very briefly. I mean, if you look at the word inclusion itself, it means that you're including someone into a defined object or into with parameters, you know. Where you look at the word expansion, it means that you are taking down this object that's defined and you creating new parameters for it in order to expand it more. The challenge with trying to include everyone is that we might have a broken system that does not work, and you're trying to include everyone into the system, and yet you need to step back and ask yourself, how do we expand the system by changing its rules and its regulation? And I guess that's arguably what needs to happen. If you want to, an inverted commas, include everyone, you actually need to change the rules of the game and expand it more. based on what people are doing, not based on this European standard, as Andrew has touched on, you know. So that's what we look at as a Stokvel, is instead of trying to include everyone, how do we expand the Stokvel industry, basically, you know. Yes, we still need to you need to operate within the law, of course, with those FICA documents and stuff, but how do you look at it and say, okay, how do we reduce it using technology? You know, do we need to see someone physically? Can we do it via technology? You know, there's so many things we can do, biometrics as an example, you know, and do we need to tell people to bring their own constitution, or can we auto-populate a constitution for them, and all they need to do is just sign it, which is what we do as Stokvel. So when you come on our platform, you automatically get a constitution which you can amend as you go, you know. So we try to reduce as much of this barriers that are already there by doing some of the things with the technology, and that's what we talk about, financial expansion.
And I touched on it earlier, the fact that your solution is obviously very fintechy, it's online, it's kind of smartphone based, and speaks to a generational shift that we're seeing underway here. Are you noticing that a younger generation is now coming in and perhaps demanding a more sophisticated, a more investment-led approach to Stokvels than perhaps their parents have had in the past?
Very true. We are seeing a shift in the mindset of Stokvel, you know. Average age on our platform is about 35 years old, you know, so already that tells you that the people that are looking into going to Stokvels are those young-minded that want more out of life, you know. Yes, you still want the foundation of burial, arguably, but you sit and say, look, we have 300,000 rand. Are we going to die tomorrow, all of us? You know, what's the average mortality rate of South Africa, you know? And you realize that actually we don't need the entire 200,000. We probably need 30,000 just put away in that savings account, and yet, you know, and then take the rest and do something more with it. You know, as I said earlier, we can't still talking about 40 billion rand in 10 years from now. It does not make sense.
Andrew, NSSA's role in all of this, what role do you play? What regulated and legislated role? And what is your vision in terms of taking that capital, as Sepo said, and expanding it, managing it almost the same way that perhaps a provident or pension fund would be, to grow that to 100 billion in the next 7 years?
Yeah, I think our emphasis is on facilitating financial literacy. Financial literacy is very important, because when you address Stokvel members, you have to take them along. They should understand what you're talking about. So as NSSA, we appreciate the enthusiasm of new energy that comes from young people such as Ayanda and Sepo and others, taking into cognizance the fact that some of the people who have shown enthusiasm to help masquerade as pyramid schemes, as you know. So we are in the position, or rather trying very hard to create a balance to promote financial literacy and opportunities, at the same time try to protect Stokvel members from quick money-making schemes as well.
Well, as we know, there have been a few shady operators, and that's certainly not going to go away. That's always going to be with us. But one way to get ahead of that is to educate, Ayanda. Since the launch of SV Capital, and you're a fairly new offering in the market, what sort of sense do you get of the level of education that that needs to be undertaken to ensure that we get more financially savvy Stokvels investing in something that's delivering a return at 7% every quarter, and really starting to shift the paradigm away from one of mistrust to one of really trusting the opportunities out there?
Yeah, so we've identified that there's definitely a gap in the market. So you'll find Stokvels that, so we ran a survey, interestingly enough, and we found that a lot of people that are part of Stokvels and Stokvels do actually want to invest, but don't understand the mechanics behind investing. And there's this weird notion around Stokvels that investing is meant for the wealthy. So they assume for investing, you need to put away a large sum of money. And I agree with Andrew that there needs to be a large sum of educating along the way. And how we've done it at SV Capital is we actually host personal finance and investing seminars. Because having realized this gap, we realized that to get Stokvels over that board, to be comfortable with investing and start trusting, there needs to be an element of educating them about what's available. And what's important is for any stock file trying to invest in any product, firstly, they need to understand exactly what they're investing in. They need to understand the returns behind it. And that's how we start minimizing the scams that are happening in the industry. Because I think scams only are perpetuated and happen because they take advantage of the fact that that market does not really have the required financial literacy to make fair decisions.
And Sepo, it's also about transparency, which is exactly what Stockfellow is trying to do, to ensure that in an environment where there is greater transparency, the likelihood of being scammed reduces.
Yeah, 100%. I think if we look at the arguably definition of a pyramid scheme is when you add more people as you go along. So the more people you add, the more likely the pyramid scheme would happen. You know, so now if you kept that number as an example and you don't usually add more people as you go along, you kill the concept automatically. The second part is then how do you make sure it's 100% transparent? You know, make sure that every member has got a voice and sees the actual move of money. But I think financial literacy is a foundation, which Andrew and Ayanda touch on, is that you can't run away from it. It's if you look at the financial literacy score for South Africa, it's not the way it's supposed to be, basically, for a country that we are. So you can't run away from it. It has to be done, and irrespective of, you know, what age group it is, you know, and I've got friends that are very smart, and yet they still don't know how to calculate interest rate. It scares me sometimes, you know. So I think we need to rethink how we educate people around financial literacy. You know, telling them to draw a budget sheet and Excel does not work. You know, we need to find ways that people understand money in their own language and teaching it that way.
And there's a great opportunity, as I'm hearing it, for you to partner with the likes of an Assessor, because here Assessor has access to over 300,000 stock files. You know, it hosts education and investor seminars, so to speak, and you've got a platform that's all about that. Are you chatting? I had to put you on the spot. Are you and Andrew chatting?
Andrew, I'd like to chat to you.
Well, there we go, Andrew.
No, you're welcome.
We like to facilitate meetings here on Classic Business.